Hello, welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're back here to discuss all the Apple news. There's been some news this week. It's been cool. It's been really cool. Joining me, fantastic panel. We're waiting on Doc. If Doc bothers to show up and see us, we never know. He might. And I still don't know how to edit shots without being live. I'm crap. I am proper crap at this. Joining me, start us off, Adam, how the devil are you, mate?
I'm doing fine. It's all right.
It's all right. It'll do.
It's all right. Yep.
Nothing invigorating or life-changing happened in your life?
Yeah, but we don't want to go into those things.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough.
Not topics for the show. I can tell you personally afterwards if you want.
No. It's okay. Not a problem, mate. Next to him, it's Patrice. How you doing, mate?
Oh, doing very good. Doing very well. Like, crazy weeks as always, but I'm always looking forward to the show.
Excellent, buddy. And last but by no means least, we haven't seen you in nearly a year or over a year, I think, Steve.
Yeah.
How the devil are you, mate?
I'm doing darn good. Thank you very much.
And how's Apple World today?
Actually, surviving, so which is a good thing. Last year, I was kind of wondering about this time of year, but things seem to have stabilized and actually gotten a little bit better. So
cream floats to the top, mate. Don't fear. Good. Good to have you, mate. We'll have you on more often because Muller's doing the bookings now, not me, because I'm shit. So I was a run around at the last minute and hope, and thankfully these three guys turned up on a regular basis. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been any shows ever. So you'll be on more often as we go forwards. The week in Apple, all the stuff that's gone on. We're going to start with some obvious stuff in a minute, I guess. But the one thing that happened to me this week, since I got my iPhone XS Max, I have been, the bane of my life has been the two-factor authentication for trusted devices. Because I've got a lot of devices.
Okay.
So every device where I've had to sign into my my .Mac account, I've got a thing up that says, oh, hang on, there's something, someone's trying to log into your computer in Manchester. Is that okay? Yeah, it's not in Manchester, but yeah, all right, fair enough. And I click OK, and then I have to put in a six-digit code, and it has been an absolute pain in the ass. I haven't asked for it, and yet Apple have decided that I need to do it, all because I bought a new phone. Thank you very much for that privilege for 1,250 quid, you bastards.
Why don't you just go turn it off?
You can't.
Yeah, you can.
No, it's every time I've logged into a new device and used my .Mac account, I've had no option but to go through two-factor authentication on that device. And it's not the two, because these computers that you're all on, I've had to do it with all of those. And then when I start them up, I still get the thing that comes up in the top right corner that says, have a look at two-factor authentication, and there's no piss off button.
You go into your iCloud account, you turn off two-factor authentication.
Right.
You shouldn't, but yes.
You shouldn't, but that's, I mean, then it would go away.
Yeah. I don't believe I'm any more secure as a result. So I know I am secure when I put it in, but anyway. The other thing that came up was an interesting thing yesterday was if you've got an Apple TV 2, because my parents have got my old Apple TV 2, and you can't do 2-factor authentication with that.
That's correct.
Right off the bat. So the one thing I wanted to say today is if you've got an old Apple TV 2, it still works. There's no problem. The way you do it, and I've got this because I was on tech support yesterday for a while, is that you have to put the authentication code straight after your password with no spaces.
Correct.
So you put in my password, and then you type in 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, right, whatever it is.
Whatever
that
comes the code
up,
is.
Yep. With no spaces, and then your Apple TV 2 will do all sorts of, but it won't do it straight away. You've got to refresh it.
I would guess that you could also generate an app specific password and use that one, but
yes, but you can do that as well, I believe.
But so I just thought that'd be useful for everyone. But Apple, if you're listening, you should have asked me first rather than just forcing me into it, and you've not given me any options.
Are you sure they didn't?
Oh, don't give me the terms and conditions shit. I'm not having that.
I'm not telling you about the terms and conditions. I believe it is part of the phone setup where it does ask you.
Right, really? Well, I did that live on air, so I don't recall.
It's default.
I thought it's default.
You probably clicked through it and didn't.
I'm sorry,
Tim. It is defaulted on. I will give you that.
Right. But I clicked
through. There's probably a little text link that says, no, I don't want to enable this now. Right. Oh, so there's the big button and then there's the tiny text link.
I feel bad. Sorry, Tim.
I don't know. I'm just theorizing. I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm saying I believe, I haven't gone through the process in a while, but I believe it does that onboarding thing. They do try to push everybody to two-factor authentication, and I think they do it when you set up a new device.
The one thing I will say, having tried to go through and find out how to do it through the forums, there's a lot of fucked up people. There is a lot of people who are not happy.
Just finding this out now.
Not just me.
I love two-factor authentication. I use it everywhere I possibly can. I think it's great.
Well, especially with Mojave and iOS 12 being able to have it auto-enter.
Yep.
Well, that's great. I love it.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Anyway, job done. iPhone XR. Who's ordering an iPhone XR?
I'm not that rich.
But no? No one's
ordering? I already bought a 10.
Steve, have you not got a review unit or?
No, I've got a.
He's not a teen focused blogger or a vlogger. I mean, YouTuber.
Yeah.
Because that's who
you
got
get
them
on
all.
That.
Did you notice that this year, like everybody who got a review unit was invited to New York, and they're all like YouTube channels I've never heard of, probably because I'm too old.
Well, yeah,
but it wasn't even like, you know, Imore or Marquise Brown or what's that guy's name?
Marcus Brown,
Yeah, it wasn't even those. He probably did get one. I didn't double check, but a lot of the YouTubers were like, who is this YouTuber? And they only have 6,000 followers on Twitter, and what's going on? I have no idea. It was weird.
So I actually quite like the look of the device. I've got to say, if I'd held off on the purchase of my iPhone XS Max, I think I probably would have jumped and bought one. I think so. Like Muller's going on about the 7 and going, I don't know if I don't want to pay the money, but it's time to upgrade me 7. I think it would suit him down to the ground because it's got.
Oh, it's a massive upgrade.
It's a great.
It's an upgrade from a 7.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's a great phone, Muller. If you're watching, you are watching because you've just said that you're watching on a Windows machine, which is sacrilege. But I think that's the phone for you. There's an awful lot of people.
It's the phone for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was we did a discussion based on something that was posted, I believe, on Apple Insider about, you know, the question was, and I'll pose this to you guys and you can give your theories and then I'm happy to share mine. But, you know, I received this question from some listeners should I buy a used 10, which are going on eBay or on online places for about the same price as a 10R? And so that's the question. Do you get a used 10 or do you get a 10R?
Get a 10.
You're paying the same price.
I would do a
10R.
10R, definitely.
Yeah, that's exactly. It was across the board.
That feels like a no-brainer.
The argument against, just so people have it, is OLED and pixel density. So if like that's a huge issue for you. Obviously, the 10R has an LCD screen, and it's only 326 ppi, which actually is a lower pixel density than I believe the iPhone 6.
Pixel density, if that's a $400 problem for you, go on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
And most people.
And then the telephoto lens. I mean, those are the two biggies. You know, and you can throw in 3D touch if that matters to you, but with iOS 12. Almost everything you do in 3D touch can be done with a press and hold.
Yeah. On the other hand, you get like a better CPU. You get, I think, a little bit more battery life, all of that. So
bigger screen, you get, the neural engine, you get the depth of field stuff in the camera, even though it's a single lens. Like it's just better in every way, I think, like vastly. And I see it as longevity, right? Because the processor is such a huge upgrade that, you know, a year, I would imagine if you get a 10, you know, 2 years from now, you're going to start feeling it. Whereas if you bought a 10R, that thing's still going to be screaming.
Yep.
Mm.
So.
Yeah, I think it's a good,
plus
phone.
Plus colors.
Yeah. Now, the most popular color or the color in least supply, I don't know which it is.
Yeah. This is ironic, isn't it?
Is it? Because I got to say, this is the this is important. This is proper journalism. Is it because they didn't make enough yellows, or is it because yellow is the most?
Oh, it's yellow. That's my favorite. That's the one I would have went for. I thought it was black. I saw some.
No, yellow went first.
We're going like two for one.
No, yellow went first. I think. Yeah. It was at least one of.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who love yellow, so I'm guessing that's why.
Yeah, I just thought they didn't make enough yellow.
Well, they probably didn't either. I mean, I bet you there's certain colors they probably predicted, you know, tried to make an estimation that maybe these won't sell as well, like the yellow and maybe the coral, and they may have hedged their bets and they may be finding out differently. So it could be a combination of both factors, right? Colors has always been a problem for Apple in terms of supply chain, because you never know what people are going to go for. They had the problem with the original iMacs. Back in the day, I knew some resellers, and when Apple was doing, you know, the five-color iMacs, they were forcing retailers to buy five at a time, one of each color, because otherwise they'd just order Bondi ones or blue ones, or and then they could never sell the other ones, and they had built too many. So they were, like, forcing retailers to take the odd colors. Didn't go over well.
Just curious, what color would you have gone with? I noticed a couple people said yellow, but I think I probably would have either done the blue or the Project Red.
A lot of people really like the Project Red and have said it's gorgeous. Ewan's particular to the coral, I believe.
Yeah, well, I did. Well, look, all right, fair point. You got me. I was going to reply. You got me. I've got to say, I felt the cherry red was kind of nice. Yeah. It's got that Fender Strat. It's got a Fender Strat kind of feel to it, hasn't it? I think that's what it is.
Question becomes, how long before they do the 10 and 10S and 10S Max in red, in a product red? They usually do it eventually, right? But it's usually 6 months, maybe even longer later before they do that. So right now, the 10R is the only one you can get in product red if you want a new phone.
Yeah, it's usually March timeframe, not March, April. That's when they do that.
It's nice. It is nice. They're all looking nice, actually. I've got to say, I've been really impressed with the 10R.
They're going to sell a ton. I mean, it's going to be by far the most popular model, and I think it's going to actually be the thing that gives us an uptick in iPhone unit sales and revenue in Apple's first fiscal quarter, but the last quarter of the year.
Yeah. Mm. No, that's good. It's a love. Now, what about the camera, though? Because the camera's, is it the same as the 10, or is it an upgrade from the 10?
It's exactly the same as the wide angle on the 10, I believe. Pretty sure. There might be, I can't remember, there's something about the effective resolution of the, or the, not resolution, the effective angle of the camera lens on the 10S and 10S Max, which is more like 26 millimeter versus 28.
Right.
But I think it's still a 28 millimeter glass, so I couldn't figure out how that's supposed to work.
Yeah. We've had some pictures in. Thank you to Mark Sissons. If you remember, Mark was the guy that helped me out with the prototype Mac SE that I've got when I went out to the Apple store with it. He used to work for Apple, and he's got a 10S Max, and he sent some pictures through from a car rally that he went to. These are just out the back of the camera. And I've got to say, I am pretty impressed with these. They look lovely. The color saturation on them is really nice. There's a little bit of exposure missing. They're a little bit underexposed, perhaps, but I'm being picky. They're not bad at all.
Yeah, must have been about 2 weeks ago, my wife and I did a driving trip down into New Mexico. And of course, a lot of the fall colors are popping out there. I took most of my photos with the iPhone XS, and that's in competition with a Canon DSLR, and I felt that the photos from the iPhone were actually better.
Have you gone to 100% and zoom right in on a pixel by pixel basis? Because that's where you start to see that they really are pretty shitty.
Not
yet. Comparison. Yeah. If you start taking the, you know, the 5,000 pixels of your Canon DSLR and looking in, they're crisp pixels. Whereas when you get in really close with your phone, they're not.
They're especially
large. you couldn't blow that up to like, I don't know, wall sized.
If you shoot panorama, you can get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do it if you're just shooting standard.
Yeah, and especially if the lighting's not really good.
Yeah.
I've noticed, like, if you have any kind of lower light, that effect, that mushy pixel effect is even more pronounced.
No, I mean, I recently took a couple of really good shots of my dog in, like, when I was up in Sedona, and a couple of other shots, and I can still, I mean, even with a 10S, I can still see a difference. I mean, the 10S is good, but you can still see a difference between those two.
It's great. It's a great camera.
Of course, my Canon DSLR is awesome 6 years old, so that may have something to do with it.
No, even a 6 year old. So I've got... I've got two Canon 6Ds, and I've got a Canon 5D Mark III, and I've even got a Canon D100, and the D100 shoots better stills.
I think my... I have a Nikon D3000.
Well, there's your problem right there.
Well, no, but I will say, I mean, I believe that's a 12 megapixel camera, and I still prefer the images out of that than the ones coming out of my iPhone.
Yeah. Well, you say that, but actually, if you've got a Canon D300, that was a 6 megapixel camera, but it had a 35 mil sensor. So you've got, that's the key part, is you've got massive pixels.
Sensor.
You've got a massive sensor size for a low ratio of holes.
It's a D3000.
Yeah, so that's probably what's the saving grace. You've got a big sensor there with a 12 megapixel ratio on it. So you're going to shoot great. You're going to get really good low noise out of that. Your quality of image is not about the number of pixels you got by any stretch of the imagination. It's the ratio to the sensor size.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if you've got crop sensors, you've got tiny sensors, so you're still getting, you know, a 24 megapixil camera with a 35 mil sensor versus a crop sensor, you're going to get a much crappier picture out of a crop sensor.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I mean, the flip of that is it's amazing what you can get out of your iPhone's teeny tiny lens and teeny tiny sensor.
Yeah, that's right? Absolutely true.
I always said to you guys when the pictures were there and they showed some of the stuff from the iPhone, it's an iPhone that's taking the picture, but there's 100 grand's worth of lighting behind there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, I mean, lighting, that's what I'm discovering, is lighting will make all of the difference in how that how that thing performs. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. At least,
and most of the photos I'm talking about were taken in very bright conditions, so that kind of says it to you right there. But the colors just seem to really pop.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's the way they're dealing with the saturation, perhaps, a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of them are oversaturated. Sorry, Ewan.
No, you were right. I mean, Ellis is wants to be an actor, and he loves his acting, and he's part of a group at school, and he's doing it as a qualification school. But I said, you know, okay, Ellis, I'm right behind you, totally with you, but you've got to bear in mind that 90% of actors are out of work 90% of the time. So have something else that gets you onto the set where you're in demand, and then you can do a bit of acting and impress your way forwards. But he kind of got that thinking. And he said, well, like what? I said, lighting, dude. Lighting. Yeah. Lighting, lighting. Because you will be in demand, mate. If you can make someone who's in a dark studio look like they're outdoors just because of you got three lights there to light up, you will write your own ticket, mate. And you'll never be poor. And you'll be able to still do your acting if you want.
Yeah. Lighting. I mean, I've done that job. Lighting makes all the difference.
You know what's funny as a parent, because my daughter has dreams of being a screenwriter, and you know that used to historically be the job that you'd be like, oh no, not anything in you know entertainment, because it's going to be so hard to get a job and stuff like that. I feel like with Apple and Amazon and Netflix and Hulu and all this huge demand for original content shows, YouTube, and like anything in those fields, lighting, you know, all that backstage stuff, camera work, any of that sort of thing is going to be in really high demand moving forward. I think it's going to be hard to get jobs.
Good point.
Or not hard to get jobs.
Hard to find people.
It's going to get harder to find people because, again, traditionally parents have like swayed their kids. Don't go into that. You're not going to be able to get
become an actor.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, man, there just seems like there's more opportunity than ever.
Steve, you just pointed out in the Slack room, and you should have bloody said this because it's a good point. Where the bloody hell's green? There's no green. I've just clocked it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I really think they should have done a green, but, you know, what am I? I don't know. They also should have done a camo version.
Yeah. I think the issue with green is very difficult to pull off. I mean, if someone can do it, it's Apple, but it's a very difficult color.
Well, they did pull it off. There was a green one in the in the 5C, wasn't there? And it was a proper, it was a horrible lurid green.
Which green? Would you do like a British Racing green? Would you do a lime green? Would you do...
Well, the one that they did before was key out green, because I remember when I made the Pocket Show titles, it keyed out bloody thing.
So what's the right green? It's maybe green. I mean, green gets people get really opinionated about green, I think. Blue to a certain degree, too, but...
Yeah, but blue, you see, blues are one of those colors, and I'm guilty of this myself. There are certain blues that you look at and you go, I love that blue. I want that blue. That blue behind Steve, that's a lovely blue. That kind of azure, kind of deep, what's lapis lazuli kind of color. Absolutely gorgeous. And then you get other blues like the Max Show logo here, and that looks like it's been painted for a council toilet. It is. That's what public toilets get painted this color, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Or prison walls. So yeah, it's soothing, right? So.
Thanks, man. That's going to stick now.
Yeah.
No, I still say the red. Got to be the red. It's just got Fender.
Institutional blue. Isn't that what they call that? Or institutional green.
Blue. I might have a toe
title. No, we had that here, really. It was a thing in the 70s, but I think it was green, institutional green, and they painted all of the schools that color because it was supposed to be like calming and help you focus or something.
Mm-hmm.
Soothing.
Yeah, no, that red is the exact color of a Fender Stratocaster, isn't it? That is the same. I reckon that if you take the Pantone reference of the cherry red Fender Stratocaster that Mark Knopfler had on the Dire Straits tour in Live in 85, I bet you that's exact. I'll lay you money. Someone needs to get a picture of that and lay the two together and give us a sample shot. I'm in the chat room. Get that done before the end of the show and I'll show it and I'll give you credit as well. Hmm. Was there any other news? Yeah, there was.
Oh, geez. We haven't even hit the biggest news. Yeah. You going to get there yet?
What's the biggest news? Just so I know.
Invites for the Apple event?
Yeah. No, I was going to do that next.
Okay. Let's go.
Whew, I thought I'd missed one. Tim Cook highlights the Big Draw sketching session taking place at Apple stores this month. Would that be around the 30th by any chance, Tim? Because they've got an invite for a special event with a whole load of graphical stuff. That means there's a new pen coming, maybe. There's certainly new iPads coming, and I can reveal, because my source has confirmed, it's not a suspicion that there's USB-C on the new iPad 12-inch. There is. Yeah, there's definitely. It's not even close to being a rumor. It's a
confirmed at this point. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the question becomes: does the pencil work with old iPads?
I guess so.
The new if they do a new pencil, isn't it going to be USB-C?
Oh, it'll have to be an HDMI connector, of course. I hadn't thought of that bit.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole question. I mean, I don't know whether that was confirmed. Do they do like lightning and then have a lightning to USB-C cable? Actually, they already have a lightning to USB-C cable and use that for USB-C. Or does it actually have a lightning port and you can plug in any USB-C? That's something I'm not sure about.
Oi.
Whoa.
Right, come on, own up. Who's revving a motorbike engine under the desk?
Not me. So are they going to give you one of these things that's lightning to USB-C or
I'm impressed
USB-C to lightning?
I'm impressed you haven't lost that, Adam. Because I've lost
got
mine.
It in a little. I'd leave it right here by the desk in this little thing. I've used it once, I think.
Exactly. Yes.
No fudging clue where mine is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the other option, that they just give you a little adapter and say, okay, I mean,
I think it's USB-C to Lightning, right?
Use your USB, just use a Lightning cable and just charge it with your like standard USB charger.
I want to know the correlation of the advent of dongles versus the increase in divorce for Apple users. Because I reckon... No, there is. I'm serious here. There's got to be a correlation between when dongles started being the thing to when people started getting divorced because they argued over, what have you done with my dongle? Where's that? I left it on the desk. It's not there anymore. You've tidied it away. Where have you tidied it? No, I haven't. Oh, and it's in my car. It's in my jeans. Sorry, my mistake.
I think we got a show title.
Yeah. There's a curve. I'm telling you, there's a curve there, boys.
I'm going to send you, so these invites went out. Did you see that they all have different Apple logos?
Yeah, they're all...
370 different logos.
How many?
370. I'm going to send you the image.
Hold on. Right, okay. I'd only clocked 12, but...
So this came from Ali Reza? On Twitter. Alireza.
I know a guy called Ali Reza. It's not.
There you go.
Yeah, 370 different logos, and none of them were on the invitation that I did not get.
So, you know, I think everybody's thinking this is meaning, you know, this is Apple Pencil, this is about artwork and stuff like that. What I'm wondering about these logos, because what happens is if you reload Apple's webpage for the event, you get different ones each time. It makes me wonder if they're going to talk a little bit about AR and machine learning and stuff like that, and if they aren't generating these like through an art filter or something like that that's AR or
definitely see that
machine learning driven.
Yeah. Really?
I could definitely see that.
Yeah, and so maybe, because that's how, like, what was that great photo app that I'm not going to remember the name of right now, that sort of pioneered this whole concept of applying, you know, taking an art style and using machine learning and AR to apply that.
I can tell you about, was it 13 years ago, I want to say, when I started out at, like, getting my bachelor's degree, there was a department there that was like working on this. So using machine learning, using computers to actually, or well, it was the early days of machine learning, using something like machine learning to actually like use watercolors and like paint and all of that, like oil painting to like replicate all those art styles and actually be creative. So not just like redoing something someone else had done, but actually creating a picture.
Yeah.
So, Adam, were you talking about Prisma?
Prisma, exactly. That's the app that I'm talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, but then somebody pointed out to me, well, they're not, you know, like once you've seen one of a certain style, when you reload it, it doesn't change. So that maybe invalidates that theory, but I don't think it does, because I'm guessing they're generating them and then caching them. And so they may build up. I mean, this person says there's 370. I wonder if there could potentially be more over time. As more and more people load the page, but I don't know. You know, it's just you start seeing duplicates because they're probably being pulled randomly from a cache.
Yeah, I would guess so. I'm pretty sure that's a static cache somewhere.
Yeah. Right. But the initial generation of each style may happen, you know, at a certain point. Yeah, I don't know.
Could be.
Apple's been really into that, so they could add that to, you know, and maybe, I don't know, maybe there's a new app for doing drawing.
Or it was just a little side project that one of the engineers did, and they were like, oh, that is cool, let's use it.
True. Yep. Could be any of those things.
Yeah.
I'm more excited to hear about new Macs, although I don't think we're going to hear about them during the event, unfortunately. I think it's probably going to be an either small aside or just a rev.
Well, here's my thinking.
In the background. Yeah.
Not that it's important. But so I think there's going to be a split in Mac launches potentially, because all the Macs have always come out around WWDC. And I think what's going to happen is you're going to get the Pro-E elements are going to come out around WWDC. And then in the fall, you're going to get ones that are more domestic oriented. So you could get Mac Mini, or you could get a revamp of iMac, because that would be those are classic, not iMac Pro, iMac, because those are classic home machines, aren't they? They're classic family machines and entertainment-based machines.
And MacBook.
I
don't think you're going to get them. Well, MacBook maybe, but MacBook's still got that kind of MacBook Pro-y kind of connection. So I'm not sure about that one. But
there's supposed to be a lower cost MacBook, so a sub $1,000 MacBook update.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I think that would make sense. I mean, in the past, like, I remember the first Mac I got, the first MacBook I bought, they released that in October, and for years they did October releases. So I could definitely see that.
Yeah. So I think we're going to get something from Mac Mini. If anything deserves to be shown, I would think it would be a Mac Mini update, because it's been so long. Maybe the MacBook, depending upon what they do with it. But I think we will get an iMac Rev, but I think it's just going to happen on the website. It's just going to be new processors and new specs, nothing major.
Well, there is big, heavy rumors about Mac Mini.
Yeah.
Oh, the possible
a big,
you know, kind of Mac Mini Pro type thing?
That was one of them, yeah.
See, I don't see Mac Mini Pro. Because Mac Mini's always the drug sale, isn't it? Mac Mini's the thing that you always want to get people into the Apple ecosphere at the $400 to $500 mark. And I think they'd be foolish if they started shoving Mac Mini out to $700 or something like that. That'll just kill it.
I think it's just an expanding of the line, though, Ewan. I think you get revs and updates on the bottom end, and for a new thing, you could get a Pro. A lot of people lamented the loss of the Mac Mini server. I know that. So. Yeah.
Oh,
there was a market for that machine, that $700-$800 sort of, you know, dual drive, whatever. You know, I don't know what a Pro Mac Mini would look like, but.
Is there a possibility of Mac Mini splitting into a number of lines? So you'd have a home entertainment spec, and then you'd have a.
That would be the idea.
A Pro.
Yeah. Or it'd be a render machine, or it'd be there are people that use them as servers. There is a market for a quote unquote Pro version of the Mac Mini. What that is that's the question in my mind. It's like, who is that serving? And I think you're right. It's the people who want to use one as a media center. It's the people who want to use one as just a number crunching, you know, headless machine sitting somewhere, or a server
Apart from the revs of iTunes, though, you can still use a G4 Mac Mini to run a media server. It's faster.
Oh, yeah, you can use lots.
Why do you need
lots of things.
Pro machine for that? That's what I'm saying.
But there's a market, though. All I can tell you is I heard from so many people that were, like, very angry at the loss of the Mac Mini server.
One example would be like for video editing. I mean, Final Cut and especially Compressor supports running renders on multiple machines. And if you can buy like a bunch of cheap, like quote unquote cheap Mac Minis, and just stack them somewhere in a closet and have your own rendering farm for that, that is definitely valuable. And it's cheaper than buying a bunch of more or less outdated Mac Pros.
You can buy a bunch of iMacs.
Kind of going back and forth in the chat room right now. I would love to see one that's about yay big, you know,
hockey
pretty
puck,
darn
yeah.
small, and same size as the Apple TV, as he says there. You know, it's possible. I actually have, I've got the Raspberry Pi. You've got, I've got a little Android PC that's about yay big. And, yeah, you could put a nice sized SSD in there. You have HDMI out.
If it's acting as a server, it doesn't need a huge SSD, does it? It's only file transfer. So
honestly, if you look at the internals of a MacBook Pro, current gen MacBook Pro, I think it would be even rather easy. I mean, other than maybe thermal issues that I'm not sure how that would work. They could just take those internals, because you don't need a battery. So just remove the battery, take the internals, put that in a Apple TV size chassis. I think that would more or less work. I mean, it's probably a little bit more difficult than I'm portraying it, but I think Apple could do that.
You could change the name too. It could be the Mac Nano.
Why not?
The Mac Mini Mini.
The Mac Shuffle?
Mini me.
The Mac Shuffle. That's a bad dance that died in the 70s.
Wasn't that thing in Goonies? That was the thing in Goonies, right?
The Mac Shuffle.
The Truffle Shuffle.
Oh, right, okay. I guess that most of the market for the Mac Mini now just want a headless Mac, says Deep Pan, as much power as possible and just rack mount it.
Yep.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
Again, I think there's multiple scenarios where a thing like that works, and that's definitely one of them.
It's not doing the playing, though, is it? Because that's what the Apple TV is doing. The Apple TV is just getting the film from that as the server, and that's linked to an external drive.
Right.
Yep.
But if you can get something that's super tiny and is the same size as or slightly smaller than your external 3.5 drive where all your movies are, then, or even like a NASI kind of effect, then that would be cool. Or if it came with a 3 terabyte chip in it that you could put all your movies on. Or
remember too, like there's people out there that run virtualized machines on these. There's people out there that they just want a Mac branded computer. Some people even wipe them and run variants of you know, Linux on them to do whatever they want to do from a server perspective, or you know, run Docker instances, or like there's a million applications. It's more about the form factor and the brand. You know, so like, and it's, these are people who don't want to buy like an Intel, what do they call those things? The NUX or whatever.
They
want a mini.
Yeah.
They want an Apple.
I don't know how big that market is, but just remember the Mac Mini was actually invented or introduced as a like drop-in replacement for a PC. And there are probably a lot of people out there still who like, they have their setup. They have really nice monitors. They have everything there. All they want is a Mac. They don't want to buy like to spend money on a Mac Pro because that's like overkill for them. They don't want to buy something that has a screen because they already have everything. That's the Mac Mini.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
maybe Apple could call it the Apple Pie, but
it's a small market, and that's why it's not getting revved, you know, very frequently. But when it does, there's a whole, that small market sort of jumps up and will jump right in and buy them. So, and Apple understands that, I think.
How many people were upset when Apple, I mean, last time they basically dropped the quad cores, went back to dual core, and basically also dropped the server version? There were a lot of people who were upset about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want, because that's the big thing, that's the reason I've got 5 Mac Minis purring away under here with you guys on them, is the fact that I've got audio in and audio out separately, because that's massive for me. And I'm sure that an analog output is massive. Or some audio files. Absolutely positive.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, on the other hand, you can solve that with a dongle today.
No, you can't. See, that's the problem. This is where we've had real issues, and that's the reason I bought 5 Mac Minis as soon as... Because we had the old Mac Minis, and I had enough to run with my old machines. I could run the wall. But when people donated and we got enough money, I wanted to buy Mac Minis because I had audio in and audio out, and I was worried that the next iteration... Yeah. Little did I know 2 years ago that there wasn't going to be another iteration.
Yeah, next year, right? Yeah.
But that audio in, audio out was a crucial part of maintaining this Skype wall. Most definitely. Yeah,
sure, no,
and you can't do it with dongles. We've tried and you get massive latency issues. It doesn't work.
But I mean, half of it, us at least, are using like digital interfaces and don't have any issues with that. So it's not a... like.
They still have lag.
Yeah.
Sorry, any digital interface has some amount of lag for sure.
Well, but the internal interface is also like, it's an interface. It's just on a different level. So I'm pretty sure, especially with like Thunderbolt and USB-C now, I'm pretty sure that is a problem that can be solved.
I mean, we've always...
I wouldn't expect an audio in or out on the next...
I'd be quite happy to sell these and have a solution, whereas the single computer where I can run all of you guys on here and I can switch between you, but there isn't one. There isn't
without lag. That's
yeah. And the other problem
could you do that with an old Mac Pro tower and a bunch of cards?
The problem you get is always the audio because you get mix minus problems. You can't do the mix minus, and that's
even if you had 4 separate audio cards or something slotted in there.
Well, you can, but the problem then is you get so much delay on those that people are talking over each other because one doesn't cut out the other. The analog is the quickest and easiest way of doing it, and there is no latency and there is no problem with the Mix Minus, which you get with everything else. But we've tried digital sound cards and it doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, the chip within the Mac is still doing the same thing. I mean, the delay is still there. It's probably just less because of how it's integrated. It's still an 80-80 converter.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Are we done with that story?
Oh, okay. Patrice has had enough.
Yeah. It's. Yeah, I mean, I'm.
Are we excited? I guess the way to close that out is: are we excited about new iPads, iPad Pros? Yes. I spent my money this year on my iPhone, so I don't think I'm going to be buying a new iPad Pro. But
yeah,
I'm kind of excited about them.
I don't need a new iPad Pro. My old one is just fine and dandy. Thank you very much.
Mine too.
And I've got a version one, and it's just like.
I bought one last year. But if they came out with one that has Face ID and like USB-C, I'm almost certain I would jump. Like, it depends really on the features. I mean, it works fine. There's no, like, nothing wrong with it. But if they added Face ID, because that's the thing that I really am missing right now, I would probably jump.
Well, it's definitely going to have Face ID, so get your wallet ready.
I got so used to Face ID on the iPhone X and the XS Max. It's just something I really, really, really would love to see on an iPad.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. As I said, and then USB-C, I think, could be a big difference for me as well. And I'm really hoping that they also change the keyboard, because the one I have, that I still have issues with it.
I can't believe none of you have... We're in the chat room typing out the lyrics to Bohemian Rhapsody and taking it in turns, and someone stalled on my... So that crash was brought to you by a copyright DMCA notice from Queen.
We got a YouTube takedown.
We got a takedown notice that was instantly applied by Telestream to Wirecast. I don't know what happened. I'm sorry. I went to start typing and it all just disappeared. Who knows, eh? Oh, mate. Well, I guess we finished talking about that then, because Patrice has had enough. So
we were done.
Yeah.
Good edit point, really. Apple highlights apps offering Siri shortcut integration. Now, I want a conversation about this, because Siri shortcut integration has completely bypassed me, and Siri shortcuts has completely bypassed me. I've done nothing with them. Right. I know nothing about them, and I haven't bothered to look. So give me the 101 on Siri shortcuts and why I should be bothered.
There you go.
It's the IFTTT of iOS, basically. If you have something that you're doing on a regular basis, even something more complex, that's probably what you can do with it.
So can Siri integrate with apps that I've got on there that don't allow Siri integration necessarily? So
no.
I've got a Loxon security system, and I can't go Siri turn on my alarm or Hey Lady turn on my alarm. Can I say, but I can touch the screen and do it.
But you can if the app developer adds Siri shortcut support. So it's on the third-party developer to open up the hook so that Siri shortcuts, so you can assign a Siri shortcut. And if you want to see which of your apps have done that, you can go into settings, into I forget what they call it now, Siri and
search or something?
Search, and then look through the list of, you've got to tap on all shortcuts, and then it'll show you all of the apps that have hooks. So apps have to build specific hooks, and so they could write a thing that would be exactly what you just described, and then you can assign any command that you want. You get to pick the command. So you could say, batten down the hatches. Hey, lady, batten down the hatches, and then it would do that in your third-party app.
Yep. The only thing it doesn't do right now is anything
HomeKit. How many third-party apps have gone ahead and actually done the integration? If you go in two shortcuts and tell it that you want to create a new one and just put blank in the search field there, you get the one list of absolutely every app that you have that, you know, pretty much this goes on for a while. I mean, as you can see, there are a lot of apps that I've got out there that do support it. So good stuff.
Yeah. It's a power user feature, though. I mean, to sort of what Patrice was talking about, you have to have a need for it. You know, you have to have a thing that you want to automate or do. I haven't particularly personally found any, especially Siri shortcuts that I'm using on a regular basis or that are useful for me, but that doesn't mean that they're not useful. It just means that I haven't found an application and, you know, that makes sense for something that I need to do. But a lot of people really love them. You know, a lot of people are using a lot of them. I know third-party podcast apps are probably one of the favorites that I hear about, but that's probably because I hear from people who listen to podcasts. So, you know, play this show or play that show, you can kind of set it up so that it'll actually launch your third-party podcast app rather than the built-in podcast app. So. Mm-hmm.
Did Wirecast crash again?
No. I'm just typing in, just finishing off the lyrics.
No, because the stream looks like it's frozen, or at least that it's for me.
So you probably could have written a shortcut to do that for you, Ewan.
What, to type the lyrics?
Sure. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah,
so nothing really matters.
Yeah.
No, stream's not frozen, mate. Refresh.
Yeah, it was just, I don't know, me.
Nothing really matters. No, it does, mate. When it crashes, it really frigging matters, Bob. Bob's put, as I've said before, you need to have some understanding of programming concepts to really get the most out of shortcuts.
Yeah, but I mean, the simple
that's shortcuts. Arguable.
The simple Siri shortcuts that apps offer that you can like get in the Siri settings, and like also even on the lock screen sometimes it asks you whether you want to. I think it's on the lock screen or notification center or something. Those most people can use because those are very simple. It's just one app, one thing it does. Like, do you always send a message to this person? Do you want to send that message and have it as a shortcut?
Yeah.
Yeah, those Siri's suggestions are absolutely great. And, you know, even some people that I know who really never use Siri are going, oh, this is kind of cool. It just asked me if I wanted to do this using Siri, and they'll add it. So
it'd be good for a custom message if you're driving and you can't take a call or something like that, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than just using the standard ones that they've got, you can get your own that's specifically for a person.
Yeah, I mean, correct. If you're, I don't know, you're texting your spouse when you're on your way home, like to prepare for like dinner or whatever. You can just set that up as a Siri shortcut and just say, I'm on my way home or something.
Hey, darling, where's my frigging dongle?
For example.
If you can't find it. There's something wrong.
Oh, you see, you've had that discussion. You've had that discussion, Adam. You've done the, where's my dongle gone? What have you done with it? I haven't seen it. I haven't touched it.
I know,
it.
Right, where my dongle is.
Yeah, you got it back.
I don't know why you can't find yours.
This podcast and all this is brought to you by TSO Host. They're absolutely fantastic. We got all our stuff with them. Everything's transferred over. It's running smooth as silk. Patrice and Anders have done a fantastic job setting up everything. Adam's chipped in with a few questions and helped as well. Thanks, boys. Great job. The website is running fine. We had a bit of a DNS issue when the old server switched off this week. So if we lost us for a little bit, but we were back straight away. It was picked up very quickly by Patrice and Sol. So we're all good. Thanks to TSO Host for supporting us. It is really important because we would go away if we do not get support from TSO Host. And they're not asking you to transfer all your services over instantly and give them money. It's about you giving them brand recognition for the support that they're giving us. So we desperately need you guys to go out on Twitter and Facebook and say thanks at TSO Host for supporting at British Tech. And you go, yeah, okay, a few people do it. And I've noticed a couple of people that do it on a regular basis. If we get those messages going out regularly from everybody saying thanks for supporting us, that secures TSO Host for us because that's what they want from us, that brand recognition and that knowledge of support. So please, please, please get those positive messages flowing out for TSO because they've done a great job looking after us and we can't fault them. So thank you very much to them. And also thanks to Wirecast, it's crashed tonight. I don't know why. It's probably something to do with me Mac. But it's up and running, and it's great. It gets us to do all the switching. If you've got a... that's Doc. He's coming in for the show. He's an hour late because he thinks the clocks have gone back. If you do anything like, say, you've got a sports club, you could broadcast to people that can't get there using Wirecast. If you've got a church or something like that, you've got some parishioners who can't get into the church, you could broadcast the services. There's loads and loads of ways that Wirecast can help you. And it's all from that company Telestream as well, who make ScreenFlow, which is... ScreenFlow's gone from being a screen capture thing to almost Final Cut now. So it's absolutely brilliant. Get a hold of that if you possibly can. And Uniku. I'm wearing my Unikus. Here are mine. And Chris Campion's had his done, and he loves those. If you want to know about Uniku, then write to podcast@hoya.co.uk. And again, please, please, please give them some brand recognition out on Twitter as well, at Hoya UK. Please, thanks for supporting Outreach Tech again, and the same with Telestream. So do look out. Time for the cool things then. Start us off, Patrick.
Oh, I didn't even prepare anything. Yay.
Okay, so we'll come back to you. Adam?
Go ahead, Adam. Yep. So I'm going to do a Mac app today, and I'm going to do a thing that is helpful if you're trying to save storage space or images, mainly for the web and stuff like that. But if you're sharing out images and you want to maintain the quality but make them smaller. So I use this in my web development work quite frequently. I've had a number of tools over the years to do this, but one that I found recently actually through Set App, but you can buy it or get it separately, I think, is an app from Real Mac Software called Squash. And it is super simple. There's not much you have to do. You basically open it up. It's one of these one window apps. You drop the images onto it that you want to compress or squish down, and it squishes them down and makes them smaller. There, of course, are some settings you can play around with, so you can change sort of some of the quality. It handles PNGs and JPEGs. You can decide how you want to do that. Like the other day, I was wanting to convert some PNGs that I had grabbed as screenshots and convert them to compressed JPEGs. And so I was able to do it super quick and easy with this. And that's about it. I mean, it doesn't get much simpler than that. I forget what the price is. It's available on the Mac App Store.
$14.99.
For $2.99.
No, this is £14.99.
£14.99. Again, if you have Set App, though, for your $10 a month subscription, you already have this. So I would get it that way because you're saving money in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, say that again.
It's available on Set App.
Right. I was just about to say, is it available on Set App? Because this is screaming Set App, isn't it, as an application?
Oh, yeah, it's great. And so I was saying, rather than pay the $14.99... you know, I would pay the $10 a month for Set App. You'll get this along with a bunch of other software that you probably want and will use. And it's, in my mind, a better value. But if you just need a good little, you know, quick squish and image app and you're willing to pay, you know, £14.99, then go for it.
Installing. Installing.
Yeah, it's really handy. You know, again, it's not a complex thing, but it's a handy little tool to have. I use it every once in a while.
Yeah, no, I've got some image crushers that I use once in a while, and I'm generally fairly happy with the results, but if I've got it part of SEPA, that's even better.
Yeah, I've used Image Optum in the past. I like the interface on this one a little bit better. Yeah, I think it has the same kinds of controls, but...
Yeah. That's good. Really good. Impressed with that. Good pick, mate. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Mr. Sandy, what do you have for us?
Well, it's one of those, you know, have you ever gotten to that point where you say, oh, I really want this thing, you buy it, and then you go and you, you find out like 2 days later that they've just come out with a new model? Uh-huh. Well, I had that situation happen when we went on our little trip out there. Got one of the... I'm really into VR photography and just love doing it. 360 photography. I've been doing it for years. And it's probably about 3 or 4 years ago, there was a company called Insta360 that came up with this little thing that you could plug into the Lightning port on an iPhone. and it would take 360 pictures. It really didn't do a very good job, so I never really used it that much. Well, the company has progressed. They've come up with new models, and a while back, like about a month ago, got a Insta360 ONE, which is kind of their latest version of their VR camera. Go off on our trip to New Mexico, doing all this great 360 photography, come back and find out that they've come out with a new version of it that is improved. But I gotta say, even the Insta360 ONE, 360 and then the word one, is much better than the GoPro Fusion. If anybody's thought about getting a GoPro Fusion to do 360 photography, don't get one. Honestly, the biggest problem that I saw with it during the time that I owned one was that...
So you just be careful, mate. I've got £700 that says you're talking out your ass there.
What? Yeah, £700. Anyway.
No, I bloody bought one. Stop slagging it off. It's brilliant.
What, the 360?
The Fusion.
Fusion? No, it's horrible. The software sucks. The fact.
Oh no, no. Seconded. The software is the biggest bag of shit you ever saw in your entire life.
Exactly.
Yes, but the camera's not.
Yeah, the camera's actually pretty damn good. Even though I didn't like the user interface on it, but anyway, Insta360 ONE. I've got to hand it to that company, and now that they've got the ONE X out, I think. You know, a lot of these companies are starting to get into the Apple naming process. You know, Insta360 ONE X. The next one will probably be the XS or the XR or the XS Max. So, but I got to hand it to them. The Insta360 ONE is now running and it's playing music to me. Stop that. $299. And there, I just had to shut that off. And anyway, highly recommend it. Very good product.
The thing to say is if you have bought yourself a Fusion, a GoPro Fusion, and you're not unhappy with it, fear not, because Insta360 360 Studio is free and it's a universal format, so you can edit all your stuff. And I go out with my Fusion and I've slung my Fusion underneath my wire cam. And sent it out shooting 360 images. And I've done tiny planets with it as it's been moving past things. And they're amazing.
Aren't they incredible?
Well, no, when you stick it on a wire cam that's flying at 20 miles an hour, they're even better. Real vomit comet stuff. But you can stop. And the thing with Insta360 Studio is that you can pick the image and effectively you can pan and tilt it like you've got a gimbal on the underside of your camera and you haven't. It's brilliant. The software for Insta360 is there's nothing close. There is nothing even remotely close to what it can do unless you're going into pro level software, and it's free. So go buy it regardless of what 360 camera you got. I totally recommend the software, mate.
Totally agree.
Steve, do you have this drifter accessory, like the Nerf dart?
Oh, I think that is absolutely cool. I'm just trying to think of a use case where I could actually use it, but just to go out and throw it through a tree or something like that would be fun.
Yeah. I bought the, did you see the Air? A-E-R.
That's hilarious. You could just hollow out a Nerf football and throw it, couldn't you?
That would be good. Well, you've got to watch because the camera, because the lenses are bulbous on the 360 cameras.
So. Right. But couldn't you just hollow out a notch
No, because they've got to be out to do the 180. And if you land it, virtually all the cameras don't do replacement lenses. Because they're integrated.
And there are no filters because it's bulbous.
But I've got an Air, which I got for me iPhone, for me GoPro 5. And that's like a dart that you can throw. And I've been out and played with that with the kids and Sharon. It's that's kind of cool. I just want a slingshot on it, though, so I can yank it even further.
Yeah, one of the other things I love about Insta, they came out with that, what do they call it? It's the, I can't remember what they call it. But anyway, basically you put the camera on a string and you whipping around and it's shooting at 120 frames per second. So you get this slow motion as if somebody's flying a drone around you in 360 without having a drone. It's absolutely cool. You know, yet another one of their really kind of innovative little things that they did.
Yeah, no, superb.
So anyway, that's it.
Awesome. Well,
never then, my garbage.
Have you got anything for us, Patrice?
Yes, I was about to pick something on setup as well, and then I remember that there is an app that is free and that I started using and really enjoy. It's Firefox. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago, and after that I was like, well, I should give it a try and use it like for like getting production server ready and web development stuff and so on. It is awesome. Like, it doesn't use as much RAM as like even Safari right now. I have quite some issues on Mojave with RAM. I don't know why. And it's awesome. Like, the tooling is really good. It works smoothly. No issues. It's not slow. It's actually very, very fast. So highly recommended. And as I said, it's free. So what else can you ask for?
Yeah, no.
Like, that's dump cool. Dump Chrome. Use for Firefox, I would say.
Well, yeah, I agree. It's I've forgotten about Firefox.
Yeah, we had, I don't know which show, it was one of the last couple of shows where maybe Doc or something, someone mentioned it, and after that I tried it, and it was awesome, as I said.
Is it available on setup?
That's a joke. No, because it's free. Would actually be cool if they'd added that, but no. That's it. Awesome, awesome app, totally free. Mozilla, I think it's mozilla.com or firefox.com or something like that. Didn't even look that up.
Cool. Good one. My cool thing, you're going to like this because it's part of Setup. And it's Glue Motion.
Nice.
What's it called?
Glue Motion.
Glue Motion.
It's just been added to Setup, brand new in the last couple of days. Now, I have recommended in the past a program called Sequence, which is very good. It's an excellent program. It's got a few glitches in it sometimes. And you're limited to 2,000 images before you have to completely restart the application, which I've always found to be ridiculous. So that's the big frustration that I've had with it. Glue Motion is included within Setup. It doesn't need restarting after 2,000 images. Massive win straight away. And it does. Now, the thing that I thought, well, that's great, but it's free with Setup, so it's not going to be particularly fully featured. It's not. It's really fully featured. It does deflickering and white balance. It'll do all the stuff that Sequence does, and it doesn't dump out after 2,000 images. So, and it's part of my subscription. So I am swapped over. I've had a little test play with it, and the time-lapse is brilliant.
Nice.
It is brilliant. Mm-hmm. It is beautifully smooth and it is deflickered very, very well. It's better than Sequence, and I always like Sequence. So,
are you using this with like images from like a GoPro or something like that? Or
are you
taking your time lapse? I guess is asked.
Well, I've got GoPros, and I've also got the Sentry cameras that we use for the lean studies that Anders and I invented. So we do the I do the processing of the films that I want for the final videos, not the lean videos, but for the final videos. Mm-hmm. I do those just to get a bit of extra footage so that I can include it.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's a fantastic program. It's well done, and it's good, which is great.
So this kind of handles like color and making sure they look nice and smooth.
It'll balance your images and it'll also then deflicker them as well. So one of the problems you get with you, because you get daylight changes. If you're So if you're shooting at every 2 seconds, it's not so bad because you'll get a gradual change in light. But if you're shooting 1 a minute particularly, you can get a cloud going over the sun and then coming out again the other side within 2 minutes. So you'll have one image down, one image up, and one image down in terms of exposure. And it'll correct that.
Nice. It's brilliant. Cool.
Very nice.
Deflickering in time lapse.
God, I love Setup. Because like this is exactly the perfect use case for having a Setup subscription. Because this is something I wouldn't use all that frequently, but every once in a while there's going to be a time.
Well, you can get free applications in the Mac App Store that do time lapse, and they do a great job, but they don't do deflickering. You've got to pay to get the deflickering exercise. And Sequence did a very good job of deflicker, but Glue does as good. Glue Motion does as good. So.
Yeah, because my daughter has a project coming up where she might be doing some time lapse, and so this would be perfect for it for school.
Ideal. It's great if you're doing, if you've got like a stop motion thing where you're doing it as well, it's perfect for that. It'll deflicker for that too.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Where can we get a hold of you, Patrice?
Well, as always, every week you're on The Mac Show and everything I do on thepatrice.com.
Excellent. Adam, where would you be?
Real simple, maccast.com or Maccast on your favorite podcast app or Maccast on social media.
Cool, mate. Thank you very much. And last but by no means least, Mr. Sen.
I'm everywhere. I'm on appleworld.today. Got a relatively new site. It's been out since the summer and podcast called Tangible Tech. You can take a look at that at tangibletech.net. And the podcast, Tangible Tech, is available on all your favorite podcast networks.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much for coming. Been a long time since we've seen you, but it won't be very long before we see you again, mate. I do apologize.
Thank you very much.
My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow the network at British Tech. This evening, we are all sitting down to watch the new Jurassic Park movie that's been released today on iTunes. So we're all excited. No. We're all excited. No spoilers.
Really?
No spoilers. No spoilers. No, we love Jurassic Park, mate. Shut up. We'll be back next week on Friday, as normal, for the Mac Show, and Friday as well for the Big Show. We're going to do a back-to-back. So it'll be Friday, Mac, Curry, Big, in that order. Yes. Get in there. See you next week. Thanks for listening.